Well, good evening, everyone. Let's start with introductions.
Wendy, Judy,
Violet,
Leslie,
Andrew,
Ron,
Jeffrey,
Beverly,
Ellie,
yeah,
Angie. Lovely to see you. And to see you again. And everybody else. We have presumably come to the fourth noble truth of Buddha's teaching. We're using this book of the Dalai Lama's teaching on it. And it's a very thorough. And it's in one sense, because it tells a great deal about various schools of Buddhism. But it doesn't say very much about right view or right ethics or right livelihood or any of those. And so I thought it would be best to nod to it, thank you very much, and then take Buddha's teaching itself from the book of the life of Buddha. So I've done that about the first path. First part of the path, I guess. There are eight suggestions of how to bring this into focus in our life. Bring the subject of suffering, which is the first one, and the recognition that it's our misunderstanding and our ignorance that creates it, which is the second one. And the third one is that we don't have to do that. And there are ways not to. And the best way is to understand Buddha's teaching. Essentially, that's what he says. Just understand what he discovered under the tree, his deep insights. And to understand emptiness. It's an impossible thing, really. I mean, who understands emptiness? And yet, it's really important to address the question, what is this? What is this life? What is this life that we cling to so tightly? This self-identity that we're so certain of, even as we're disabused of the certainty over and over and over again. How often do we say, oh, that wasn't like me, except it was. We fool ourselves that way over and over. So right view, the first of the path. Suggests that as we sit, we begin to understand and recognize what is called the fruits of ripening. I think we know that, all of us who are sitting and have been sitting for a while, we begin to realize that something is happening to us. That metaphor of fruit ripening maybe is a nice way of expressing it. But our truths, Buddha said, are affected by our taints, our selfishness, our foolishness, our greed, hate, and delusion that keep lousing us up because we trip up on our own desires and our own confusion. But we know that it's possible to address those things, and we're encouraged to do that. We can ignore it and just go our merry way, or we can stop and begin to look carefully at what this is and how it can be done the best way for each situation, because every single situation is different. There is no written golden book telling us what exactly to do in every single situation. The best advice is simply to wake up and look at where we are, to have a view of where we are, rather than taking anything for granted. So noble ones who really understand this, noble ones, maybe my teacher, maybe Shakyamuni Buddha, I don't know what makes nobility except for being willing to maintain the path without all those confusions as a kind of living it rather than thinking it. Simply living it as a kind of model, you could say. So the basic structure of Buddha's teaching is dependent arising. We've talked about that, how from ignorance everything comes. Nothing arises alone without the support of everything else. We think we're separate. We think we're kind of floating around in space, but we're totally connected to everything. And everything is helping us at every moment. There's no separation. And that was Buddha's first insight. There's total connection. That's what he called the law. He said, seeing the law is seeing me. So the suggestion is to study and see how biased we are, how judgmental, how we're always picking and choosing everything. We like things, we don't like things. We make crazy decisions based on liking and dislike and get into a muddle. We cling to our ideas. We cling to our bodies. We understand our bodies as me. But it's possible to see, begin to ask ourselves, what is myself? What is this that I call me? And begin to appreciate what an amazing thing we are. It isn't about erasing ourself. It isn't about beating up the ego and trying to get rid of it. It's about being honest and clear about what this is as it's being lived and enacted. we're doing before we're even a being. And then we look back and say, oh, I did that. It's important, he says, to see that our bodies, our eyes, ears, nose, tongue, everything that we consider to be us, he says, it's like an empty village. I like that image. The more we are able to see that our suffering comes from our self-identity, of trying to fit it into some sort of preconceived idea, the more we try to choose what we can't choose, to not accept what we have to accept, the more we suffer. So the teaching is about relinquishing our craving for things. Just giving up, always, always wanting more. It doesn't mean we can't want things. We do want things. We need things. But the more part is what gets us in terrible trouble. The more we can't get, the more we suffer. So there are three points of Buddha's teaching: dependent arising, impermanence, and suffering of non-self. So everything is connected. Nothing stays the same. Not one thing. And there is no permanent self. No self that stays. So much of this is about our relationship with our bodies and with our world, and how we understand being a body and being a world, because each of us is a world and we share our worlds with each other. That's what dependent arising is. We enter and leave each other's worlds. So, Buddha said there's no permanent, everlasting form not subject to change. So, Thich Nhat Hanh does a number on this that is quite great. Anything you look at came from somewhere else and is going somewhere else. So, if you begin to look at the world that way, you begin to see how impermanent and how dependent everything is. This piece of paper came from somewhere. Came from a tree, ultimately. But the tree came from a seed, and the seed came from another tree, and that tree, etc., etc., etc. The world is an etc. That's it. You can't hold on to it. And you don't need to. In fact, there's joy in not holding on to it. There are many times when we need to let go, and it's so hard to do that. just to let it go. Because actually, all of our clinging is just an idea. It's holding on to an idea about something. And if we don't keep examining our ideas and noticing how everything is changing, we get lost back in the past somewhere, hoping everything will stay the way we think it ought to be, even when it's not. And if we don't understand it's not, we won't be able to take care of it properly. And really, that's the end result of this, that we need clarity. We need as much clarity as we can find in our own mind about our own existence, about who we are and where we are. This is the view that Buddha is talking about, the view that helps us see through our suffering. Our suffering is really transparent. If we look closely, you can see light right through it. So we abandon embodiment. And our conceits wear away. Conceit is really nice. That's self-clinging. We're all conceited. You know, I'm the best at something, whatever we think. Even if we're thinking that we're the worst, that's another kind of conceit of being the best, worst one. So we've got to watch out. So the conceit is called a fetter. It just holds us back. The conceit of I am. I am. So it's based on the past, what we think we remember, although we know now that we don't really accurately remember anything. Or what we think we're going to in the future. But the reality is right this now is nowhere else. No other time. So Buddha said we can get in trouble with this teaching, that we can see being as wonderful. We can be in love with the stones and the stars and the trees and life, and make much of life and create a life with a capital L. Or we can go the other way and be totally disgusted with it. And see, oh, I'm just always holding on to everything, and this is a lousy, rotten situation that I'm making for myself. And at one point in his teaching, he tried to convey this understanding, and some of his monks thought he meant that the body was a bad thing, and that being alive was a bad thing, and they went out and killed themselves. So it's really important to realize that he's talking about the middle way. And the middle way is the right here, right now way. When if we look around, we see that we're just fine. We are just fine right here, right now. Even though there may be an idea in the back of my mind that my cat is sick, or that there is a problem in my marriage, or blah, blah, blah. There are lots and lots of problems. But the truth is, at the moment, we are fine. I watched a part of Charlie Rose this afternoon. I'm sorry I missed most of it, where he was interviewing Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Sonia Sotomayor. And those two women were incredible. And one of the things that Sotomayor said was, I don't know how to be. I just try to be the very best that I can in every moment. Instead of creating a picture of how I should be and how my life should be, she said, just be this. Just be this and let it be enough. And of course, often we're conditioned to think it isn't enough. We're raised to think we should get better grades and be taller or smarter or whatever. But we can drop that, because those are just cheap ideas that we helped us get to this place, but we don't need them. All we need is the power of this place right now, whatever it consists of. So the bottom line of this is compassion for ourselves first, and for all others. That if we don't learn to love ourselves for what we don't know, for the mystery of this, and for the mystery of others, and feel the connection that we are already, be open to the worlds of others, participate in the worlds of others. This itself is realizing emptiness. Emptiness isn't some esoteric, fancy philosophical idea. It's just this little teaching of how we all belong. We belonged from the very beginning, and will belong to the end. We're of a piece. And the key to it, and the heart of it, is our own heart, our own loving heart, and our courage. Just like Sonia Sotomayor said, just be this. So that is right view. And there's time for questions, comments. Awesome, isn't it?
Ellie? Last week you said something that really stayed with me, which was that, if I remember it correctly, that if we go out to meet something, then we can know what to do. We can know what the right thing is to do. Rather, I think your point was rather than sort of shrinking away from the things that frighten us or whatever. And so when you mentioned courage tonight, I think it's kind of a continuum of what you were saying last week.
Mm-hmm.
If I guess I'm asking this as a question, but that it is part of us being this,
yes,
which is to go out to meet, to kind of go out to meet whatever it is.
They say the bodhisattva has to have tremendous courage in order to face this truth, one, that these truths are not easy to swallow. We would rather be special and separate, and we would rather suffer a lot of times. So it takes some chutzpah to do what has to be done. Yeah. Yes, thank you.
Thank you. It's helping me right now very much.
Good. Paul?
We do recite that we'll go through all the readings. So that's with encouragement. Encountering time again.
Yes. Everything.
Yeah.
And we don't know really what the outcome will be in a lot of cases. And that's okay. None of that is written either. So I always say I think a lot of our life, if we are mindful, is about being willing to be surprised. And just let it surprise us rather than trying to impose some sort of strict pattern on it. It's not clear that we know better all the time. I'm going to bunch the other ones, most of the other ones, together next week. And then maybe another week we'll have a summation. So we should be thinking about what else to study as well. So I'll just put that out here for us to think about and explore. And then I want to mention also that this is at our Saturday sit. We had 12 people on Saturday for the whole morning. I opened up the practice period. So it has begun. And now it's up to each one of us to further deepen our practice. Take the study of self a little farther. Find something maybe to look at more deeply. There's wonderful material out there now about this practice. And practice more. If you want to understand emptiness, Zazen is the way. Are there announcements?
I'll put stuff on our calendar in September. Our sashimi on the 22nd, 7 days sashimi. So registration for that is ongoing through our registrar, shika@floatingzendo.org. Information is on our website. Do you have anything on your calendar, Angie?
No, I don't. I'm just thinking about Sesshin now. It follows me around everywhere I go. Yes. Come for a day if you can't come for the week, or come for a few hours. It's lovely at Chikoji. So shall we do our 1 minute sit?